You're listening to Drinking on the Job, DOTJ. I'm your host, John Coyle. Drinking on the Job is a toast to the culture of food, wine, and all things fermented. We'll be talking with winemakers, musicians, artists, late-night bartenders, scoundrels, and more. It's time to grab a glass before it's last call. What happens when you put two powerhouse women like Tara Hankinson and Leanne Darlin together who love beer? You get Talaya Beer Company. Together, they opened their flagship taproom in Williamsburg and now have four locations. Let's talk beer in business. Let's go. Okay, I'm very happy to be sitting with Tara Hankinson. She joins me. She is a brewmaster. We'll talk about that. She is co-founder of Talaya, which is one of my favorite places to drink. We're going to talk about history. We're going to talk about beer and this incredible organization that now has four locations and are killing it. Thank you. Thank you for being on, Tara.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
So I think like this cold, delicious beer everybody's drinking during the Super Bowl. And I don't know how many people realize that we have women to thank for this. So we'll talk a little bit about the history of that. I mean, there's a small amount of female brewers. I think it's probably 3-to-1 male to female.
Is that about right? Only 3% of breweries in America are owned by women. So we have, we are in the far minority in terms of ownership and leaders of breweries. Right. So that's out of 9,000 in the country, only 3%.
Wow.
And I think there are a lot of husband-wife couples who own breweries, and there are a lot of people working front of house who are women. But yes, right, it is hard to find, for us, it's been hard to find talent on the brewing side who are not a typical brewer stereotype,
right. Yeah.
But
I've interviewed a few. I will say there's a stereotype. They're big, usually bearded.
Probably wearing a flannel shirt. Probably rode a bike to the interview.
Or they're Timberlands. It's a look.
Uh-huh.
But look, we have to touch on the beginning. How in God's green earth did you find your way here to this space? Mm-hmm. Like, where? How did this start? Hospitality-wise, wine business? Like, we've got a shout at Sue Ellen, a good friend of both of ours, who said, you have to interview Tara. I'm like, okay.
Well, that's so, kind of her. Yeah. So I have a co-founder, Leanne, and her path to beer started off, she went to the Naval Academy, served in the Navy for 5 years, and was stationed in Hawaii and San Diego. And obviously, being a woman in the Navy is, you know, pretty much of a minority as being a woman in beer.
Yeah.
And she fell in love with the craft beer scene in San Diego because it was such a contrast to the formality of the Navy. Mm-hmm. And so she moved up to San Francisco, worked at Google, still had beer in the back of her mind, and eventually left her job at Google to work at a beer startup as their head of finance. And that company moved to New York City, which is how I met her, because they were hiring. My path to beer is a little circuitous. I grew up in Pennsylvania, but both my parents are New Yorkers, and they both worked in hospitality when they were in their 20s and 30s. So
in New York?
Mm-hmm. They met at the Playboy Club. My mom was a Playboy bunny, and my dad was a bartender. Yeah.
That's pretty Playboy bunny meets
like
the bartender.
Cocktail waitress that's bunny. Yeah,
that's the movie. Okay.
Yeah, right. It is. Yeah. And my dad was 21 and my mom was 26. So she always says, you know, they were a fling, and now I guess almost 40 plus years later, they are still together and still cooking amazing meals. And so my dad went on to be, got his MBA and started in bar management. He was the beverage manager for Park Lane Hotel for a while and worked in wine importing. And my mom was the opening manager for Gotham Bar and Grill. So,
oh, no way.
Yeah. So they were very.
That's so crazy, because that was one of my first accounts back in the Scott Carney days when he was a master sommelier.
I wasn't there, but.
No, I know you were. But how old is your mom now?
74.
Oh my God. That's so cool. I'd love to hear some of her stories.
She has some wild stories.
And I had Gotham recently on the podcast, since they did the renovation and renewed it, basically, which is doing great. But that's such a crazy story. Mm-hmm. And so you said they were wine importing as well?
My dad worked for a wine importer for a while, and they would travel a lot. I think he worked for Bob Haas.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Haas Selections. That's an institution.
I mean, again, I wasn't there, but yeah. Obviously grew up with an appreciation for sure. food and beverage and, you know, a lot of storytelling around, like, when they met Paul Roget and, like, you know, when they went to Burgundy and when they went to Bordeaux and, like, all of these, you know, French wine was the thing to have at that point. So,
by the way, you're also a super mom. You should be doing a TED talk. You have twins and a 1-year-old.
Yeah.
And you still manage 4 locations and you're still running this incredible successful business. I'm going to pitch you to do a TED talk for women empowerment. But it's crazy. But it's also very interesting because we both have kids. And mm-hmm. I would say it's like, what's the expression? Little pitchers have big ears. Like, kids listen to the stories. They know this is what they absorb, you know. Mm-hmm. So you obviously picked a lot of this up. It was in your genes, I guess, now, right? Mm-hmm. So what is your first hospitality job?
I worked for my mom. She was managing a restaurant in Pennsylvania. And okay. I was, you know, a hostess on the weekends. I was clearing tables, not getting tips. But it was, you know, I think for me, because growing up in southeastern Pennsylvania, there wasn't really a dining scene the way there was in New York when my parents right. were mm-hmm. In the industry. So for me, the interest in hospitality came more from entertaining in the home and just like, let's plan out a menu and everyone gets a job and we're going to go to this market and then we're going to go to this market. And like my parents being New Yorkers, you know, trying to find some of these ingredients in suburban rural Pennsylvania, always a family affair. And sure. then when I graduated college, I moved to New York City. I was working in philanthropy and I started taking wine classes because obviously my parents had instilled in me an appreciation for right. wine and an interest. So I went back to business school. I got my MBA at NYU and that's when I did as many wine and food related projects as I could. You know?
So at this point, you're doing all these food and wine projects mm-hmm. and the idea in the back of your head is like, I want to enter this space. This food and hospitality space, but I want to do something different. Is that what led you to beer? I'm trying to figure out how that happened.
The idea was I can actually, at a low risk of working on a school project with, you know, Brooklyn Winery or Moët & Chandon,
right.
I can dip my toe in. But in the meantime, I was recruiting for consulting, trying to be able to pay back my student loans because hospitality is a bit of a different beast in terms of right. compensation and career paths. So I wasn't serious about entering the industry, but I was serious about honing some of my skills in it and using it as a playground. So went into consulting. The summer after business school, before I had my full-time job in consulting lined up, I pitched to Wolfer Estate to work there and shadow the office there, shadow all the different functions. And that's where I met Sue Ellen because she was effectively the GM or tasting room manager of their wine stand and their tasting right. room. And I was helping out with all these random things, getting paid minimum wage, but I loved it. But I had this other, you know, corporate job lined up.
Sure.
And that summer was really a turning point for me to think about beer because the Wolfer experience, which is very similar to wineries in California, you know, it's hospitality forward, education forward. It's a beautiful space, beautiful drinks. And it's just like, it's an experience, right?
Sure.
That doesn't really exist in craft beer. Craft beer, you go to a brewery, you're going there because the beer is fresh. You're not necessarily going there for a hospitality experience.
Right.
And a lot of breweries are very transactional. They're very super masculine. And I looked around at Wolfer and I saw all these people who were so loyal to the brand, so excited to be there, a lot of women. And I was like, I love beer as a product, but I've never felt a connection to a beer brand the way these customers feel about Wolfer.
Oh, you're right. There's an allegiance. People are definitely a brand loyal. And so now you're thinking like, how do I build a brand loyalty to a beer? So did you start home brewing?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Right. As home brewed, I moved from consulting to the New York Times. And after about a year and a half working in marketing and customer experience there, I was ready to move and I found the job at the startup where Leanne was working. So I had been thinking about, like, I could start a brewery. I have this concept that women are an under-targeted market. I'll homebrew, try to get some feedback on my beer. And then the opportunity that I saw at Hopsy, the company where we met, was like, okay, I can keep one foot in my professional realm, which is customer service, customer experience, marketing, but I can work in beer. And it was a way to hedge my bets instead of, you know, quitting my job to start a brewery at that point. But within a few months of meeting each other, that's when we realized we wanted to do something together.
And then you started to perfect your brewing techniques.
Yeah.
It took a while, I'm sure.
Brewing is so highly technical that I think what home brewing gave me was an ability to speak the language and to understand the levers you can pull in brewing.
Right.
But we quickly started working with a professional brewer because it is so highly scientific. Mm-hmm. It is so exact. Homebrewing doesn't really scale to a commercial system. Every system's different. You know, a lot of the best wines or the best winemaking philosophy in my mind is like you let the grapes and the terroir do the talking, right. And beer is kind of the opposite. It's completely manipulation. You could say, I want to make a beer that tastes like Fruity Pebbles and work back from that.
Sure. So yeast selection changes flavor mm-hmm. profile. I mean, there's a ton of things.
Adjuncts, you can, you know, the malt bill, the barrel aging, there's so many levers you can pull. And so we really needed a professional, which is something we realized pretty quickly. But the role of our brewing team then and now is still to make our vision come true. And we work hand in hand with them. It's just, it's really people apprentice or work in brewing for years before they hone that craft.
Well, I have to tell you, it's working, targeting women in particular. And also the space, you walk into space, it's so warm and inviting. A lot of breweries are cold benches and, you know, you get your flight and it's kind of sterile atmosphere, and then you can have some shitty onion rings or something. But yeah. My 26-year-old daughter, Mia, when I told her I was coming, she's like, oh my God, Dad, that's awesome. She goes, I drink their sour beer all the time.
Yeah.
She loves your beer. And so she's a 26-year-old woman. So congrats.
Target demographic.
And she doesn't drink a lot of beer. Mm-hmm. She prefers wine, but that's her beer of choice. So that's interesting, right?
Yeah. Do
it's
you
working.
Try one of yeah, our
let's
sours?
Try one of the beers. Absolutely.
Okay. So this is our non-alcoholic sour. You know, it is 9:45, 10 a.m., but
hey,
we'll drink regular beer.
We'll drink regular beer too. It's the Irish dream to be drinking beer before noon.
So we've made non-alc beers, which is our beer, but de-alcoholized for over a year on draft. But this is the first time we packaged it.
It's so delicious. So, you know, it's so funny because I had a bunch of questions I want to ask you, whether you were doing a beer, Athletic Brewing being one of the hottest beers, in the market, so everyone is saying, as reported to their success. But why is it? I've been dying to ask somebody this question. Why is it just seem easier to make a non-alcoholic beer than it does a non-alcoholic wine? Because like I've had Double Zero Guinness, I've had Athletic Brew, and they're good. So can you give me some insight to? I mean, this tastes like beer. I went out to dinner with some industry insiders. I had Athletic Brewing because I was going to be a long night. Mm-hmm. They said, what do you drink? I said, beer. Everyone had a beer. Not one person at the table said to me, what is this? They drank it thinking it had alcohol in it. So how is it brewing can get so close to the exact product, you know, where in wine, it's still very hard to find, you know, real wine that's non-alcoholic.
Yeah. I think for comparing it to wine, I mean, wine is fructose that's fermented with mm-hmm. the outcome being alcohol, and there's not much residual sugar. Whereas in brewing, you have there's always a higher residual gravity or residual sugar. So there are a lot of things that are unfermentable in beer that give it the texture and body and flavor and aroma.
That makes sense.
That will never convert to alcohol and then will never be taken out with de-alcoholization. So we basically brew a beer that isn't alcohol. It's a normal beer. I mean, whatever. A beer with a proof.
Right.
And then use special machinery to de-alk it. So the end product is a pure, almost a pure hard seltzer you can think of with pure ethanol in it and this beer. So there's also a lot of, I mean, for us, this is a sour. So for us, the tartness helps make it seem more like a sour beer. It has...
I would not know that was an NA. I drink a lot of beer. Good. I wouldn't know. If you gave this to me, I would say, this is a great sour beer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is what we'll be drinking tonight when I come back to my family. And a whole
flight. Yeah. We have a non-alc lager. I think it might be sold out at this location, but a non-alc porter. So
it's selling. right?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. I've been saying this for 2 years that this is going to take a big market share and been preaching about it. It's not about abstinence. It's not about people giving up alcohol. It's like if I'm going to sit for 3 or 4 hours, I will have a couple of non-alcoholics and a couple of regular. And then it's mm-hmm. just like I wake up and I don't feel so bad. It seems to be it.
I think athletics play is for off-premise, which right. makes a lot more sense because when, you know, being a parent at home with the kids, it's like being a parent sometimes makes me want to drink. Okay. And
you could like, say that. We all know that.
Yeah. I mean, we have a hugely successful like kids music class on Sunday mornings and everyone stays for a beer, but right. you can have a non-alcoholic beer and it's that same ritual of like signaling to yourself,
exactly.
hey, I'm treating myself. But you know, for us, non-alc never cracks the top five
right.
of any of our tap rooms in terms of items, number of items sold. But I think for us, we are trying to build a lifestyle brand that can be a part of people's lives, whether or not you drink.
Right.
That's why we're open. Most of our locations are open in the morning. We have coffee. We have free Wi-Fi. You're not drinking a beer unless you're us at 9:45, but we can be part of someone's life. And yeah. so that's where non-alc comes in. Like whether you're taking a break from drinking or you're sober or you're pregnant,
right.
whatever it is, like we don't want to exclude people. We want to include people.
Yeah. It makes sense. And the coffee's great and the vibe is cool. And you have 4 locations. Mm-hmm. You're in Cobble Hill. Your flagship is Williamsburg. You're in Bryant Park, West Village. Mm-hmm. Is the plan to just keep like organically expanding? Because as one becomes successful, the next does. And now you really have a brand.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of room to grow in New York City with our existing footprint with the tap rooms and wholesale. So mm-hmm. wholesale is a huge part of our business in terms of the volume of beer we make. About mm-hmm. 75% of the beer we brew goes out the door to wholesale, which is only New York State, and 95% of it is in New York City. So,
are you in Whole Foods?
Whole Foods, yeah. Trader Joe's is our best customer. We just like we're in Danielle carries our beer. Gage and Tolner carries
wow.
our beer.
Wow, I love Gage and Tolner too. Danielle's good. Danielle. Yeah. yeah.
I mean, we're yeah. not – we are – I'm really excited that we're running the full spectrum of like the bodega on the corner across from this location.
And Danielle.
Has it. And Danielle. Yeah, we can all have Talaya. Yeah. But there's still a lot of penetration yeah. that we – can do in New York City and in Westchester and upstate. So
yeah, sure.
for us, we're always open to new opportunities, but because we want to make these spaces really special, it's expensive. And so, you know, right now we're trying to really get the most we can out of this 4 location footprint. And sure. then
also scaling up. I mean, it's not like you could open 10 stores tomorrow, right? I mean, can you brew that fast?
Financially, you know, no. We right. are not okay. ready to. Right. But capacity, we can. Yeah, yeah we have.
Sour's terrific. Oh, let's do the next one. Yeah. Oof, that's good.
So we have capacity to brew about 3 times as much of what we're brewing now. Obviously, okay. we need to hire more people, but we invested a lot in the brewery over the last 18 months. So this is a sour collaboration with Fan Fan Donuts, which is Fanny Garrison, who okay. also has La New Yorkina, which is a popsicle brand in New York City.
Okay.
She grew up outside of Mexico City, and this is inspired by a guava cheese donut.
I was going to say, I'd get all this like guava and tropical
guava,
fruit on this thing.
Fruit and raspberry.
Wow. So good. Wow. And so how much of this do you make? Like, how many, what do you have on tap? How many beers?
Most of our locations have 20 to 25.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And we brew it all at Williamsburg. So we're a heavily rotational brewery. So we have 5 beers that we always have in stock. But everything else is like a one-off that maybe we never brew again. Maybe we brew once a year, depending. So we're always churning out new beers, which gives us these opportunities like with Fan Fan Donuts to collaborate, brew something new that's inspired by you know, their brand or an experience or whatever.
But. So is some of the stuff seasonal? Like you shoot out an email and saying, hey, we're just releasing this today or, mm-hmm. Cause yeah. This would like cheese because of yeah. all that tropical it would take mm-hmm. the place of like the quince paste that you would use with
totally.
The salty,
yeah. or with dessert. Cause it wow. actually has yeah. residual sugar.
Yeah. 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 Oh my God. So all right, I'll be having one of these tonight. So what kind of deep dive did you do on historical like women who made brew, which, you know, women were always the gatekeeper for grains and making brew. And then it just kind of fell off the planet and it became this kind of male dominated. Did you like go do like historical research on stuff that came over in the Mayflower or you just?
No, I would say for us, our inspiration and like the way we are leveraging being a female founded and female focused company is really just taking an approach looking outside of beer. So we get way more inspiration for our brand, our experience, our products from outside of the brewing industry, which is why we don't do a lot of work with other breweries. So for example, like this guava cheese donut is a perfect example of, if you say, I don't really like beer, I've never really liked beer, it's like, how can you not like this beer?
No, it's impossible.
Yeah, it basically tastes like a smoothie, but it is a beer. Yeah. It is a craft beer. It's made with all real fruit. We don't use any like, you know, syrups or additives or anything like that. So definitely recognize that women have had a challenging time in the industry, but the way we're combating that is just thinking outside the box. It's like, we're sort of, I think it was a bit of naivete that encouraged us this was a good idea, because we had no idea how hard it was to build a brand from the ground up in New York City.
What was the biggest obstacle?
Well, when we started, we were our own sales and delivery people, and you're in the wine distributing business. So, you know, like literally carrying backpacks of beer around and tasting people who didn't know us, didn't know our brewer, you know, like selling our beer at a premium price point, the liquid had to be good because they don't care that we're a woman-owned brand. They're cool beer people. They need the beer to be good. Yeah. And that proved to us that like we were making good beer and we could get traction. And then, but I mean, man, I have so much respect for salespeople. I've cried so many times, like on, like outside of a storefront. I'm like, you can do it. You can do it. Just go in there. After I've been rejected from that place twice before.
Oh, you get these weird calls like, hey, this feels off. Can you come pick up five cases? And you're going to pick stuff up. And like building a brand, Tom Burns, who owns T. Edward with his wife, Julia, she's the president, had Tom and I, he had a red pickup truck. And on Fridays, we'd be delivering wine to accounts. And I was happy. I knew we hit some level of success when he sold the truck, because I was like, thank God, because I'm not driving through Midtown traffic Friday at 5 o'clock delivering three cases of wine to somebody who forgot to order, or because you're building a brand. But yeah, that's
for getting parking tickets. Parking tickets. The worst.
So give me the time between your delivering this stuff and backpacking it to the time you're like, you have your first location, or you're like, we're done with this. We've now hit a certain level. How long did that take?
So we left our jobs where we met in spring 2019, and we're self-distributing our beer for a year until the pandemic happened. So, and then we took 6 months off. We had been fundraising. We were under construction at the brewery. And then we did about another 6 months of deliveries, then started outsourcing. So we basically 2.5 years that the business itself was doing self-distribution, but a full year of, you know, me and Leanne in a delivery van that we bought with our own money.
Shout out to Leanne.
We both had kids during early in the pandemic. So it was
I'm telling you, now I'm going to book the both of you for a TED talk on women empowerment. And like, it's incredible. It's absolutely insane what you've done. I drank the beer. My daughter would bring it home. I would drink it. I always thought the beer was fantastic. But when I looked on your website, I couldn't believe you had four locations. I was like, holy shit, because that scaled pretty quickly. We're in 24. That's 5 years.
Yeah, so 2021, March 2021 is when we opened Williamsburg. So it's really been 3 years of brick and mortar.
Holy crap.
But I'll give you
Let's get to the next beer. Yeah.
So this is when we opened Williamsburg, we had never made a lager. We'd only made hazy IPAs, hazy double IPAs, and sours. And we decided, let's make a lager because, you know, whatever. Of course, people are drinking on premise. They want to drink more beer than
And people don't IPA. Most people don't know the difference between lager and a Pilsner. Anyway, they know lager as a brand, right?
Yes,
so
yeah.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
So this is al dente, our Italian style Pilsner. So the first lager, which all Pilsners are lagers, but not all lagers are Pilsners. Mm-hmm. It was a trendy style, Italian style Pilsner, which is basically dry hopped. But now this has become our bestseller in wholesale and in our tap rooms.
I have to tell you something. Salvatore Augusta is our Italian portfolio director. And we've been to Italy a couple times, and the beer is so good there. Mm-hmm. But then you come back to the U.S. and you go to, I don't care, any Italian restaurant, most of them, you're drinking Peroni, You drink a Moretti, and the beers, quite frankly, suck. And like, this should be an Italian restaurant. Mm-hmm. And it's local, like, you know, then this word in New York is dominated by Italian restaurants. So hopefully you'll be getting this out there because this is delicious.
I mean, it's our best wholesale seller, both for package and draft. And I think that's because, well, yeah, there are a lot of, there's a lot of Italian influence in New York City, of course. But, you know, if you're a high-end restaurant and you only have two draft lines, or maybe you have no draft lines,
right,
you're only going to put a couple of beers on the menu. And it's probably going to be something seasonal for the people who, who are really beer drinkers, like a Guinness in the winter, something light in the summer. And then probably an IPA, which a lot of breweries in New York City make amazing IPAs. I think ours are amazing, but you know there are a lot of others. And you're going to have something crisp, refreshing, food-friendly like this. And so for us, our vision is like, if you're a high-end restaurant and you only have one tap, this is the beer that is so food-friendly. It's very savory, herbal
delicious
notes.
Yeah, it's incredible. Depth, complexity, everything. Yeah, and also people listening, you know, realize sometimes those bars you go into and what's on tap, they pay for those taps. So they're paying for that space, and you.
We don't have money to do that.
Yeah, so. But that's so.
We have to earn our spot.
If you see the Tolaya brand on tap, it's it's well chosen. It's there because it's incredible, incredible beer. So what's in the name? Where's the name come from?
Oh, it's my name and Leanne's name.
Oh.
T A from Tara and L E A from Leanne.
I wish I could have figured that out. I would look so smart.
You know, beer competes with every alcoholic beverage for trademark. So we compete with wine, every name of a wine that's ever been trademarked. Like, would have loved to name this company a strong female name like Artemis, but you know what? Stag's Leap Winery in, in Napa Valley has their Artemis wine that's trademarked. So every spirit, energy drinks, every other beer and every other brewery. So.
We've created some private labels as well. And the search, you think, oh, this is brilliant. Taken. This is brilliant. Taken. This is brilliant. Yeah. Taken. You're like, okay. So kudos for that. How about on the forefront now, you've tackled the NA thing. You did an amazing job. Do you feel like looking down the road, do you feel like cannabis is going to make its way into like beer? I mean, there's cannabis infused wines that aren't really sold legally. But do you feel that? Do you feel anything about like, anyone pitching you stuff like that? Or like cannabis infused beer?
It's from different professional investors I follow or know of, I know it's an area of interest, like angel investors, or there are more startups. The legalities of it, I think it seems like there are a lot of startups that are focusing on the cannabis aspect rather than the beer aspect and then branching into cannabis.
Right.
I think for us, we're not as interested in that as we are in wine. So we have a white label wine that we're releasing this year just to make, you know, our customers' lives easier, give them something. And also because in two of our tap rooms, we can only have New York State wine, and there are a lot of small wineries in New York, and it's hard to keep the same thing in stock for a season. So it's not our thing, but I think it's interesting.
But you hear rumblings because there's a lot of big investment in it, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Our last beer, we had the lager.
Oh, yeah.
So this is Sun Up. This is our flagship hazy IPA, the first beer we ever brewed back in 2019. It is hopped with Mosaic and Idaho 7, lots of notes of pineapple, push pop, kind of tropical notes. And it also has some residual sweetness. We use lactose, which is not fermentable by brewing yeast. So you're actually getting a little bit of sweetness on the finish.
Okay, yeah. That's beautiful. A lot of IPAs, I get those kind of, speaking of cannabis, those cannabis terpenes where you put your nose in the glass and you're like, this smells like weed, which they do obviously on purpose.
Yeah. We have some beers like that, like our West Coast styles. But the genesis of the brand was really, our vision was to expand the craft beer market. And I think so many people are put off by craft beer because they think that that's all craft beer is. It's like the most bitter, the highest ABV, you know, the pastry stout that's 12% and chock full of cacao nibs. And like craft beer doesn't have to be that way. You can have a craft beer that's like the same flavor profile as Corona, but it's craft and it's way better.
Right.
So
I think that's the female touch. the balance, the nuance.
Yes. I think it's like going, so many craft breweries sell to the same customer over and over again. And right. at some point, you know, there's more and more craft beer, you're going to run out of customers. So for us, right. we're trying to convert people who consider themselves cocktail or wine drinkers and right. beers that are, have like a more softer, rounder palate, like this hazy IPA.
Yeah, this is beautiful. I mean,
it's more,
I'm a beer drinker. Everything I've had is just is spectacular. And so it's just a cool place to come hang out. You know, my wife and daughter are coming. It's not, you know, the, maybe they wouldn't want to join me at a bar so much, but they'd come here in a second. I love what you do. You know, the good Lord comes to you in a dream and says, Tara, you know, you've done such an amazing job and these rooms are just so warm and, you know, introduce hospitality to everyone. I'm going to give you a gift and you will know the last day that you're on the planet. So oh. plan accordingly. What would you be eating, drinking, and listening to on your last day?
Yeah, I would be, my husband's family is from Galicia in Spain. So I would be drinking Albariño.
Yeah.
And probably having shrimp because I love shrimp.
Yeah. They have an incredible fish market there. The Vigo fish market.
Yes.
Yeah. Stunning. Best seafood. Yeah.
Yeah. They're from, Redondela, which is right outside of Vigo.
Yeah.
And then I really like, this Latino American artist called Helado Negro, like black ice cream. And okay. it's kind of like dreamy pop. But a mix of Spanish and English. So just, you know, I guess I would go to Spain and just die there covered in shrimp and paella.
Yeah, actually paella is one of my favorites. So I want people to be able to find you. So let's give me your Instagram, your website.
Sure.
You want to mention anything seasonally that's coming up beer-wise, please do, because I think everybody should come here and hang out.
Yeah. So we are Talea Beer, T-A-L-E-A Beer on Instagram, TaleaBeer.com. We have our four tap rooms across Manhattan and Brooklyn. And on our website, you can also find all of the wholesalers who carry us. So all the bars, restaurants, and retailers.
Right on.
We are doing, launching our non-alc on Fresh Direct if you're looking to get beer delivered to your home, which is really exciting.
Smart.
And then for Women's Month, just a shout out, we have a lot of programming. We're doing free headshots. We're doing business 101 classes.
Wow, that's so great.
I'm teaching I'm speaking about, you know, how to leave your corporate career behind and do something you love. So making our own TED Talk, I guess.
You do it here out of this space or
all of our tap rooms. We're kind of rotating around for March. So that'll be.
See, that's the other thing you guys build. You're smart. You're building a community. You do comedy, you do these events here, mm-hmm. and like it's kind of what the great old Irish pubs used to be. People would hang out, and that's where they get all their news, their information. And here you are doing exactly that and actually helping women. That's awesome. Get out of their corporate, you know, drudgery.
Yeah, I think the pandemic all gave a lot of us the time to kind of reflect on what you want out of life. And I think there are a lot of people who want to do something for themselves, but it is a big step. So in any way we can help bring people together or empower people, we want to do it.
Well, you are doing it. And I just want to say thank you for being on Drinking on the Job podcast. This was amazing.
Thanks for having me, John.
You got it.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to check us out at dotjpodcast.com. Until then, I'll see you at the bar.